Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and partner in radio, Ron Martin. Today is a very special episode. This is the Ron Martin episode of the Happy Rant Podcast. We will devote all of the next 45 minutes to one Ronald J. Martin and also Noah's events venue. So far be it from me to not devote time to the business entity that's giving us money to promote them. So baby, I'm looking at noaseventsvenue.com, which is the website that everyone should go to book a location for their next event. I see two very good-looking people dancing in what looks like just a beautifully appointed room for a wedding reception. Wow. Let me ask you this, baby, since this is the Ron Martin episode of the Happy Rant. Have you been to noaseventvenue.com?
I have not been to the website, but by the way you're describing it, it sounds like I've been missing out on some nice features, though. So maybe I need to get my way.
Baby, I think you need to make your way to noaseventsvenue.com. It's bonkers, baby. I'm looking at their locations menu, and I'm looking at all the cities in Ohio where they have event venue locations. So I'm going to read off the names of these cities, and I want to know if you've been to them or if you've had any interaction with them. Blue Ash. Have you heard of Blue Ash, Ohio?
I have not.
Dublin.
Yeah, Dublin. I like Dublin. It's a great little town.
Babe, you've been to Dublin? You've been to Dub?
Absolutes.
Interesting. How hipster is Dublin on the spectrum? 10 being the most, 1 being not at all.
Oh, I would say it's like a 5.
Okay, so it's got a little hipster.
It's like suburban hipster kind of a vibe. So
suburban hipster, absolutely. Independence, have you heard of this town?
Absolutely. I've done a bunch of retreating in Indy. Believe it or not.
Baby, you've done retreating in Independence?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Denom did a retreat there for like 3 or 4 years. Yep.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Mentor?
No.
Okay, yeah, that's a town. And the last one in Ohio is a city that's near and dear to both of us, Big R. And maybe we'll start the Ron Martin interview here and the journey of Ronald J. Martin. The city is Toledo.
Oh.
And again, if you need a space for a church service, a wedding, a corporate event, or even a retreat, visit noaseventsvenue.com, noaseventsvenue.com. They will get you all squared away. Meeting spaces that you can, on a hipster spectrum of 1 to 10, you can make them a 10, or you can make them a 1, depending on your level of hipsterness. They have Apple TVs. They have audio-visual equipment. Everything that you would need for a great event. And baby, does me saying out loud the city Toledo bring back any particular memories for you?
I almost feel like I need a minute to like just regroup because the nostalgia
just let it sink
the
in.
The nostalgia is just thick as mud right now for me. And maybe you can tell our
it's
audience
so thick.
Why that
you could
is.
Cut it with a knife.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, baby, I want to talk about how we met. So this is a crazy thing. So I was living in Lansing, Michigan. You were living in A Town, where you currently live, Ashland, Ohio, and I think you reached out to me after you read one of the KDY books, right? Or both of the KDY books?
I believe so, yeah. After I read, it might have been Emergent, yeah.
Yeah, so you reached out to me after Emergent. I hit you back because I was kind of intrigued by your background. And we decided to do a thing that I think is probably a little out of character for both of us, which is meet up halfway. And I'm pretty sure I was in a station of life where I wasn't necessarily like, do you ever have that feeling, baby, where you're just kind of like booked up friend-wise and you're not really looking for new things?
Right.
I'm in that space now, but I was probably in that space then. But we decided to meet up halfway between Ashland and Lansing, and we met at a Cracker Barrel off the highway. We met, you got a veggie plate. I got probably something beige, and we talked, we connected at the Cracker Barrel, and baby, it's been a nonstop rocket ship of just lucrative ideas ever since.
Gosh.
So why don't you tell them about our first venture together, which came before any of the books, any of the decadence, even Toledo, before Toledo. What was the first?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our first venture, and maybe some of you out there actually heard it, but it was a precursor, sort of a prototype of what we're doing here on The Rant. And it was a radio show that we're able to do in Fort Wayne at an actual radio station And it was, and the show was called The Reformatory. And so what would happen is, baby, me and you would meet up once a month in the beautiful metropolitan city of Toledo. And we would...
No, baby, it wasn't Toledo. Where was it?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Fort Wayne. It was Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Yes, it was the Manhattan of Northeast Indiana.
The Manhattan of Northeast Indiana, as we like to refer to it. So we'd meet up in Fort Wayne. We'd get our hotel at the luscious and elegant, decadent Hyatt Place, and then we would
The energy in that town.
Oh my gosh! I mean, what we would do is we would use the night before to go out on the town to do a little pre-show prep. That's back when we actually did pre-show prep.
And by out on the town, we mean places that we could walk to from our hotel.
Exactly.
So there were two places. There was a Zesto's, which if you're not familiar with the greater Fort Wayne metropolitan area, Zesto's is just a charming little ice cream stand near the Hyatt Place. So again, if you're a Fort Wayne resident, this is near and dear to your heart. And then the other direction out the front of the hotel was a really, really nice movie theater. And baby, I can't count the number of movies that you and I took in together.
Oh, it's endless.
In Fort Wayne, man, we just burned that town to the ground.
It was incredible.
You know?
And then we'd wake up bright and early, and we'd head to the radio station, and we'd record some magic. I mean, it was really that simple.
We'd do some work. Yeah, we'd do some radio work. Yeah. Baby, as you look back on that experience, don't you think it's one of the greatest scams of all time that we got them to comp us a hotel room and some meals to basically do what we do now via Skype, which is to sit in a room and talk to each other.
Well, yeah, because again, I mean, a little background, right? I mean, so the station, I mean, the kind of shows that they featured on the station were super teen oriented, and they were sort of these outreach programs for troubled teens. And so we would...
Yeah, it was Jenny Eat Something or don't Cut Your Arm
or
whatever.
It was super
not to make light of it.
It was super after school special of radio shows. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And then we would come on there, and all we wanted to do was talk about, you know, sort of the new reform movement and everything that, Kevin DeYoung was doing and everything, you know, that's going on at TGC. And, I mean, dude, you got these dudes that are recording us wondering, what are they talking about? What are they going off on? Who's this guy Driscoll they keep, riffing about? And it was really, but
baby, one of my favorite recollections of that experience doing radio in Fort Wayne. One of my favorite memories was how dark the studio was. Do you remember that? Like, we were sitting across from one another at a table, and I could barely see.
Yeah, I still
it was
still
like
have
that
no,
Lionel Richie video where
I still have no recollection
where
of what you
where the girl
like.
Is blind. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hello, is it me you're looking
exactly.
for? You know, that
yeah, there's
thing.
There's fog kind of drifting through the studio in the dark. And so at some point you would emerge through the doorway and find your place.
Exactly. Baby, I know that our listeners love, they love kind of insider industry stories, and they love to hear all about the glamorous lives that we lead. So if you could just briefly let them know how we got from our humble beginnings in Fort Wayne to Toledo. Because I think everybody listening wants to know, how do I get to Toledo? If I've made it there, I can make it anywhere.
Absolutely.
And you and I made it in Toledo. How do we get from Fort Wayne to Toledo? Because this is a glamorous industry story if there ever was one.
I mean, I'll just say it how I remember it, baby. And you can kind of, just let your own recollections just sort of pervade the story, but I just remember that, you know, every time we got together, we came up with approximately 9 different book ideas, and we actually had, I think we had sent a couple in, we had done a couple of proposals, and we thought they were good, but they didn't quite catch the interest of any publisher, and then we had this
of anyone in the world,
of anyone in the entire world. And this was on the heels of Rob Bell's, infamous travesty, Love Wins. Yeah. And so we were kind of,
which one?
We're right. Exactly. All of them, but Love Wins most specifically. Uh-huh. And then we came up with this idea called, When Believers Don't Believe.
And yes, dude. Yeah. That was the original title. That in years. That was such a good
one. Oh, it was
a
great title.
Such a good title.
Yeah, and so we pitched it. It caught some interest. And then we had a we got a book deal together, baby. And that's how, that's what led us to Leeds. But maybe you can kind of riff on like how that changed into the book that it became.
Yeah. To Leeds was unbelievable, man. That was glamorous. And, in reality, Ron, and I don't like to be this raw and vulnerable with the audience, but I'm going to do it. In reality, we probably paid our own way to Leeds, but in my memory, the publisher paid for that and they put us up. And we had a decadent couple of nights in Leeds, just chopping it up as artists, just digging deep into this book. I remember we went to a couple of coffee shops and worked, but really the apex mountain of that to Leeds trip for me was walking around downtown one evening, just taking in the energy of that town, just the madness, the madness and the magic, the colors, the diversity in that town. Unbelievable. Yeah, so unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, we're walking around just breathing in this rich tapestry of Toledo, and a gentleman approached us and he said, "Are you guys, the radio personalities from the huge hit show The Reformatory that I've been hearing about?" Because everywhere I go in Toledo, it's all a buzz. It's all anyone's talking about. And we said, why yes we are. How sweet of you to say. And he offered us two like ground level box seats right along the first base line to see the I think it's the Yankees AAA affiliate. In my mind's eye, it's the Yankees AAA affiliate, the Toledo Mudhens.
Absolutely.
I'm sure I'll get well actually to high heaven.
Go with Yankees AAA farm team. I'm good with that.
Let's go with that, baby, for the purposes of this conversation. And you and I took in a Toledo Mudhens game like gentlemen, and I just thought, wow, this thing is a rocket ship. You know, today Toledo, where are we going next?
It was like, I remember at one point practically sitting on your lap in those very tightly confined box seats. And I remember looking at you saying, I'm almost depressed because I don't know where else we can go after this.
Right. Pinch me. Is this real? And it will be easy to pinch me because you're nearly in my lap.
It
would
be easy to pinch you. All I had to do was move my finger.
yeah, just a tiny bit. Exactly.
There was just sort of that sense of like, this happened so quickly. And now help me, Big T. Because I feel like you need to get my emotions. You need to box them up because I feel like there's no place for them to go now. Because when you've arrived at a destination much faster than you thought you would, you just feel like there's nowhere else to go. There's no place to move. No,
all that fame at such a young age for us.
I know.
You know, how do you deal with it? You know, if we'd known then what we know now.
Absolutely.
And I want to tell another story of a thing that happened on that trip that really, I think, solidified our friendship and took it to a deeper level. So one of our mutually favorite things to do when we travel, and we discovered this early on, is to go to like whatever used bookstore, whatever used media store there is in that metro area and peruse it. And we were at a place like this, some kind of used book and record store or whatever. And we were looking around and they had a bin of bargain DVDs. And I didn't. Oh, wow. Did you hear that, baby?
Yeah.
In my studio?
Yeah.
Baby, that's the sound of my new cat. We got a new kitty cat.
So did we.
Man.
And, we just got one 2 weeks ago.
Did you really?
2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Dude, congrats. We got one like a month ago. It's
my
incredible.
Gosh.
I love this cat.
Yeah, we got a great cat.
But she just jumped up on my desk and like knocked a bunch
of stuff.
You know
what, though? It sounded good because right when you said it, kind of built up into this momentum. So I liked it.
Yeah. No, it's really cute when she does that, man. I like it. It's my favorite. But, dude, tell me about your new cat before I get back into the story. Like, what's the deal?
So we've always dreamed of having a Maine Coon, which is like a type of cat. They're these big dudes. They're really big and they're really friendly. And so we found one at a shelter. It was an older couple that just couldn't take care of it anymore. And so we just happened to be right place, right time. And we got this. These cats are usually like $1,500. We got it for almost nothing. Took it home. He took about a week to acclimate, and dude, he's like the best cat of all time.
Dude, that's incredible.
Yeah, we're stoked.
Yeah, we had a similar story, man. We got a kitten. She was like 3 weeks old. Got her from a girl in our church who had planned to like take her to college and smuggle her into the dorm.
Wow.
But she got busted, and then she said, "Does anybody want this cat?" And we we jumped on it, man. She's super affectionate, great kitty. Loving that, man. Loving it. And I finally came to a place, like grief wise, where I could
You could receive her.
You know, I could I could receive her. I could open.
You
my
could
heart
love
up
again, Big
like
T.
That.
You could love again.
I could love again. I learned to love again. You
and
know?
You know what? Can I just add something really quick, man? It takes a certain
baby. Of course, this is your.
It
show.
Takes a certain con. And now that we don't have Pipe on here, we can talk a little more freely. If we're being honest,
dude, we can be a little more sentimental.
Absolutely.
Can't we?
So, and what yeah. I want to say is, it takes a certain kind of man with a certain level of heart and security to embrace a cat.
Oh, dude, expound on that, because I totally agree, but I've never thought about it in those
terms.
Because
I feel like people that have dogs, it's like they're trying to assert some level of control, because you can't control mm-hmm. a dog. And so there's something interesting about that, whereas what we're trying to say is, no, mm-hmm. we're bringing in an animal of which you have to earn their affection, and mm-hmm. we're okay mm-hmm. with just letting them do their own thing. We don't have to control
dude,
their
absolutely.
World. Right? Am I wrong?
I enjoy the dance.
Absolute.
You know what I mean?
Absolute.
I enjoy the sort of yeah, just the dynamic of you know, her not always being there and her not always being available, but when she is there, like just like totally enjoying
absolutely.
It. Enjoying
like when you're
moment.
A cat owner, what you're essentially saying to your animal is, "Hey, you do you. You do you.
You do you. We're going to give you like an amazing environment to like just roam around and be comfortable and receive love, but you do yeah. you. Yeah, exactly.
It's a,
and whenever we're a part of that, we'll be
it's
thankful,
an upper middle class you know? Existence for us.
Yeah, it really is, man. It's elegant. The cat is elegant.
The cat is an elegant beast. He's a noble beast is what he is.
He's an elegant, noble beast. And when the cat's in the house, I never feel like, oh, I got this animal in the house. This is unnatural. Like it's dirty. It's bringing in whatever. Like there's never that conversation.
No, it's
know?
Like it's
the cat is just
yeah. It's almost like it's just it's like it almost just complements like the furniture and just
yes, dude.
I mean, it's like something that actually it almost like adds value to what you've already established as the environment of the home. Am I wrong,
baby? You know what it is? No, you're not wrong. You're 100% right. The cat is like a. The cat's like a painting that moves
yes.
around. You know what I mean? She's like a piece
yes.
of art that can walk around.
Yes.
You know, just beautifully and wonderfully made,
it's,
man.
Yeah,
elegant
it's a more
creatures.
Elegant beast for some very, very some very vicious times that we live in, you know?
Oh, dude, we live in such vicious times, man. And the world is so nasty. And I just look at the cat and I think she's unsullied by those things.
Precise.
You know what I mean?
Precise.
She's unsullied, like she's not a thing that I need to control, like I don't need to exert my... And I really think you're onto something with the whole, like... And this is not to bag on dog owners, you know, dog owners are great. My parents have a dog, I love their dog very much, but yeah, there's kind of a need to control there. And, you know, I think some dog owners are akin to, like, the kinds of guys who, like, buy gigantic trucks, but they don't do any, like, actual manual labor, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like you got to show the world something with this. With
yeah,
this
it's almost
truck.
Like a when you get a dog, it's like you're saying, "No, I need another status symbol in my life. I need
yeah,
to show the
yeah.
world that I'm powerful and I have strength.
I'm powerful. I'm in charge of something. I have strength.
And when you get a
so
cat, you're saying to the world, I believe that there's beauty and art in the world, and I want to celebrate that. That's what a cat.
I want to celebrate it, and I'm going to enjoy.
I want to enjoy it.
Correct. Absolutely, absolutely. I want to enjoy. Baby, I'm so glad we had this conversation.
I know, me too. I feel great. I feel even better about my new cat.
I do too. I feel encouraged, and I'm glad my cat hopped up on my desk and is knocking a bunch of things off of it right now. So, so if you hear anything along those lines in the background, that's what it is. And far from being annoyed by
yeah.
it, I am celebrating.
You're celebrating it because you now live in elegant society.
That's it, man. Welcome to elegant society. You know, I feel like I've been here all my life. I love it. Baby, but speaking of elegant society, I want to speak of the most elegant place, which is Toledo, Ohio. And a thing that happened when we were in Toledo. So we're at this used media place browsing. I didn't know you super well yet at that time. And I was browsing a bargain bin of DVDs. These were DVDs for like a dollar.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm in a position to acquire DVDs in this way, I always do it. Even if it's like a movie that I'm kind of mad about or on the fence about, if I could ever imagine liking it, I will get it in this context. So I'm looking through these DVDs and I run across the DVD for a movie called Rocky Balboa. And if anyone has been a listener to this program for a long time, they know that I'm a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. I ride with the Rocky franchise. Huge fan of these movies, and I had not yet seen Or I had seen Rocky Balboa. I'd seen it in the theater, and it was okay. You know, it exceeded my expectations, which, to be fair, were really low. But, like, I wanted it in my collection. Like, I just wanted to round out, at that time, my Rocky collection. So I'm going to buy this. But then I had a little catch, baby, in my spirit. Because I thought, you know, Ronnie was in the music industry. He's this, like, ethereal, like, hipster figure. He probably hates movies like this. Like, he's probably going to mock me for buying Rocky Balboa. And that wasn't going to stop me from buying it, but I just had the thought, this is probably beneath him. He probably watches, like, Tree of Life and pretends to get it, you know? He's probably a fan of Terry Malick. Terry's work.
Terry's a lovely
man. What a lovely man, though, Terry. Yeah, just a wonderful man. So I pick up Rocky Balboa, and I walk it up to the counter, and I said to you, I said, baby, I don't suppose there's any way you would want to watch this with me tonight. And you said, what did you say?
I said, baby, are you kidding? That was literally one of my favorite movies of the year. Comeback of the decade for Sylvester. Yeah. I loved Rocky Balboa. Loved it.
Oh, baby, I feel like that opened up our friendship in amazing ways because, you know, that touched off this conversation that's really been going on for about a decade about sports films between us. And even though you like to bluster about how much you hate sports and how little you care about sports, which is a true statement on one hand.
When it
comes to like local team, you know, Cleveland sports, whatever, you could care less. But you are a fan. You are an aficionado. You are a resident expert on sports movies. So I want to walk through with the time we have left. We have about 20 minutes left. I want to walk through your top five sports movies, baby. And they don't have to be in any particular order, but I just want you to lay a movie on us, some analysis, why you love it, what makes a great sports movie. Let's go top five Ron Martin sports movies.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I know that there's a lot of, there's some measure of paradox there with, I don't watch live sports. I have no interest in it, but anytime a sports movie comes out, it really tugs at my strings. And it's because I love underdogness. Like, I love underdog culture. And all sports movies are underdog culture come to the big screen.
They sure are.
And so I love that.
Baby, you're like a cat. You're a little mysterious in these paradoxes.
Absolutely.
You know?
So to start out, why don't we start out with what I think might be my favorite sports movie. Again, not in order, but – and I just watched this about a month ago, and it felt very, like, apropos for the season. And that, of course, is a Gene Hackman vehicle called Hoosiers.
Oh, baby, I love Hoosiers.
It's so good. It's so good.
Hoosiers is one of my favorite atmosphere movies.
Oh, it's amazing.
Like, to me, fall and winter in Indiana in, like, corn country, the cornfields where I grew up, Hoosiers just immediately takes me back there. Incredible Gene Hackman performance.
One of his, maybe his best performance, in my opinion. Because he showed so much heart. Hackman always plays these characters that are like, you're not sure if they're good guys or bad guys. Most of the time, they're bad guys. And he came and he played this character, just this guy in his 50s that had just kind of made a bit of a mess out of his life because of his temper and coaching an old, a prior like college basketball team that he had coached. And he'd just come out of the Navy, just retired from the Navy. He didn't have anything going on in life. And this friend of his that was the principal of a small Indiana school invites him in to be the high school basketball coach. He accepts the job. He comes in. And the whole movie is just literal magic. It's magic. Mm. And not only that.
It totally
is. The soundtrack is beautiful. I mean, sometimes I'll just listen to the soundtrack while I'm working on stuff, you know. It's just such a classic. It's the ultimate underdog story. And it's based on a true story. So.
Yeah, it sure is, baby. And I love Hackman's characters. They're all like, they're always broken
Absolutely.
In some way. You
yeah.
know what I mean? They're always broken. It's very real, the character arc. A lot of regret there. A lot of regret.
Yes,
Hackman.
And I love the regret. Yeah.
But I love the regret, but I love the redemption that takes place. Let me ask you this about Hoosiers, baby. Who's your favorite player on the Hickory basketball team who's not Jimmy Chitwood? So if you take Jimmy Chitwood, the superstar, off the table, like who's your second favorite player on Hickory's basketball team?
Yeah, I really liked the son of the pastor, the pastor's son.
Strap.
Yeah, Strap.
The kid that's always
every time they would like break, he would like have to like wait because he would be praying.
Fellow man of the cloth, baby. You feel a connection.
Yeah,
to
so
him.
I thought that was I thought that was really interesting, because I don't know that you would see that in a movie in 2018 anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was vulnerable. Yeah. That was vulnerable for them to like put that in there. You know,
dude, it was super vulnerable. Yeah, you couldn't have that in a movie.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder.
I think it would not fly. It would not hold up. Strap would have to be like a an ecumenical sort of Unitarian in 2018.
Yeah, totally, man.
Where Strap would be like, you know, he'd be like kneeling on a prayer rug in one scene, and then
holding a
like
copy of like Love Wins in his other hand, and like, you know,
holding a copy of
watching
Love
the
Wins.
Oprah Channel.
Yeah,
he'd have, yeah, exactly.
He'd have to be juggling a lot of different perspectives.
Exactly.
In 2018. So, tip of the cap to you, Strap, wherever you are. Our second favorite character in Hoosiers. So, baby, walk me through another story.
Yeah, so one of my faves, besides Hoosiers, next on the list, I would say is Robert Redford in 1984's The Natural. And that, to me,
it's
is,
incredible
man,
film.
It's a lot. It shares some similarities to Hoosiers in that it's a little bit earlier time-wise, but it's still like, you know, 60, 70 years ago. It's that era of American sports when it was, you know, it was very glamorous. It was very pure. And
kind of men dressed up to go to the ballpark.
Men dressed up in suits.
You know, they wore fedoras. They wore suits.
Always wore
suits. Yeah.
Always wore those caps. It was kind of like, you know, during like the war eras, it was kind of the foundational, you know, kind of component for American families to hope and believe again, you know?
Yeah.
And Redford, oh my gosh, man. Just talk about like a tale of total and utter regret.
Yeah, absolutely. Why are those characters so interesting to us? But they are. I mean, those characters like that never get old for me. What's the appeal?
Because
that?
I think we just we find ourselves in them. And I think, you know, something about being in the faith, as opposed to just, you know, being somebody who doesn't have a relationship with Christ, is that you can actually be honest about your regrets. You can say, no, I do have regrets.
Yeah.
I do have regrets. And unlike the world that says, but I wouldn't do it any differently, you can say, no, I would do it a lot differently.
I totally would do it differently.
Yeah, there's like, I got like a laundry list of things I would do differently if I would have been more sanctified back then, or if I would have known the Lord. And so I think all that's good. And then so it allows us to really see ourselves in these characters. And then it makes sort of the redemptive part of what they go through that much more real for us, I think, you know.
No, I completely agree, man. That's a great point. And I think, for those of us who do know Christ, there's great freedom and encouragement in that. We don't have to be, bound or broken by our regrets like these guys are. And really all great dramas at some level are, you know, the world trying to figure out a secular theology of what constitutes a good life,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all these guys trying to, like, redeem themselves or sort of work their way into some kind of peace in their spirits, but it makes for a fascinating story.
Yeah, and
baby, what else?
I think,
or you can say whatever.
No,
you
not
want
at
say
all. I was gonna say there was something about there's Redford's character in The Natural as being kind of this guy that had his chance, he blew it. He's a little bit older now. It was kind of reminiscent of a movie I might mention in a minute, but of one Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire, even though that was Tom wasn't an actual, sports star in the movie. He was he was an agent, but there was something about, there was something I loved about Redford. It was like that this whole part of his history in the movie that they don't show. And so you're just wondering what happened, because they leave it out. He just returns later when he's like, you know, pushing 40 or whatever he was, you know? And
maybe not to wax too like theological, but don't you think that, and connecting with that and liking that, is reflective of the fact that we're created in God's image, right? So for me, for a movie to be really good, it's got to be almost equal parts total depravity and created in God's
image. Absolutely. That's
right?
A great point.
So the depravity part is all this darkness, all this regret over, you know, decisions that we've made in the past. But if that can be balanced by, you know, a little crackle of hopefulness, a little crackle of redemption of God's image, then I think you got a great movie. And you've got a really rewatchable movie. And Jerry Maguire for me definitely like slides into that paradigm really
and
nicely.
I think,
you know,
go ahead.
No, it's just a guy who was a dirtbag.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he was a total dirtbag, used people, and then is kind of redeemed by really being broken by his industry. You know, he gets rejected by the industry and has to kind of claw his way back up, doing things in a different way.
Yeah, and the thing too is I love, like, and again, I'm not trying to be flippant right now either. I really mean this.
Yeah.
Like I, like all sports movies, they have to end on that triumphant note. And I'm actually not going to like the movie very much if it doesn't. So there's an expectation sure. for an ending that you know is coming, but that you need to happen, you know? And yeah, and I think sure. that's what's for so sure. great about it. So the end, you know, when he knocks it out of the park in The Natural, the end when Hoosiers win the state championship, you know, the end of Jerry yep. Maguire when everything, you know, he gets the deal for Rod. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think another movie like that, and this one, I mean, this is at the top of the list for me, and mm-hmm. it kind of is in line with Hoosiers, which, of course, is Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams.
Oh, baby, I love Field of Dreams. There's the father-son
yes.
redemptive yes. aspect to Field of Dreams, which I find just always compelling. Yes. And it's funny, like, I'm at an age now where I used to always find it compelling as a son, you know, and I would watch that movie and think of my dad. But, you know, now I watch that movie and I think of my kids, you know, and it really opens yeah. up, you know, that whole story in really interesting ways. And, yeah, that's one that, like, it never gets old. I can rewatch it. Even though it's a little bit dated, yeah. it totally holds up. Yeah, just a great, simple, redemptive story in Field of Dreams. Now, let me ask you a question, baby. Back to the kind of ending that we look for and that we want in these sports movies, the triumphant moment. How do you reconcile one of my favorite sports movies? This may be the top for me. This may be the peak. Friday Night Lights. Beautiful movie, near and dear to my heart because of the... you know, the life that I've lived in the game of football my whole life. But that's one where, you know, the team advances. They're this gritty underdog team. They advance to the state championship and they lose, like, on the last play, right? They almost get it done, but they don't get it done. Reflective of what happened to them in real life. So it's true to the story. It's true to the book that it was based on. But I still love it. I think it's the perfect ending. Because there's a really redemptive, triumphant moment for one of the characters that comes out of that loss, that I think is just yeah. one of the most beautiful movie things of all time. So, how do you reconcile a movie like that doesn't necessarily deliver that triumphant?
I think it was probably too strong to say triumphant in a way, but what I mean mm-hmm. is that I think something can be redemptive without it being a total, you know, victorious onslaught, you know. I think our redemptive moments in our life, a lot of times they can come from when things don't quite work out, but you've moved ahead or you've been able to move through the place to get you to even be able to lose well or to be able to accept yeah. the defeat in a way that, like, you've grown to that place. And so that in and of itself, yeah. I mean, that's the Christian life, right? So it's like whether God gives us a victory or he gives us a defeat. Redemption comes in because our hearts are prepared to accept either, knowing that he's in control. And the other reason mm-hmm. why we can know he's in control is because we're cat owners and we're able to give control yeah. over to things, right? Going back to that.
to another being.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I resonate with that. I resonate with that totally. In fact, you could argue, going back to Field of Dreams, I mean, the mm-hmm. shocker in Field of Dreams is when Ray Liotta's character – at the very end, Kevin Costner, he comes up, he comes to this place, he goes, "It was you." And then Ray turns and says, "No, Ray, it was you." So it was all about reconciling the relationship that he had with his dad and why in the end it wasn't lost, even though his yeah. dad was gone. And so it ends on a not really a triumphant note, but on a very redemptive, now I can process the loss kind of a note. And yeah. That scene, that is one of the, when he says, "No, Ray, it was you." I mean, that was one of the most moving yeah. scenes I've ever witnessed on film. I mean, that gets me every
time.
It's
devastating
to me.
It's devastating. It's devastating. Yeah. It gets me every time too. And for me, like, concurrent with that scene, I mean, it may be just seconds after when Ray looks over and he sees yes. the young version of his father, like, take the catcher's mask yeah. off. And he has the moment of recognition. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, that's my dad. And it's just it's a freak out moment.
It's unbelievable.
Emotionally.
It is unbelievable. One of the greatest, I mean, it might be the great, I don't know. I mean, it's so up there with all the great moments, you know?
Dude, it's so up there. It's so up there. And it's up there because I think we can all relate to, like, you know, wanting to get just one more moment, you know, one more moment with somebody we love, even if the relationship wasn't especially broken.
Yeah.
But just to get that, just to see them in their prime.
Yeah.
Again, not to wax too like theological about the whole thing, but I think maybe it's a glimpse of what heaven could be like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
absolutely. I mean,
And baby, I think in the cynical world we live in, people aren't making movies like that anymore. People aren't making movies that earnest and that hopeful anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, really, everything now is so, it's so jaded, or it's a big comic book movie or whatever, which is a whole different category.
Right.
But nobody's making these kind of like redemptive stories anymore.
Well, I think,
and I miss it too.
And I think part of it is because sentimentality is kind of viewed as being a bad word right now. And,
most definitely.
Not a bad word to me. So let's go to a sports movie that sort of a remake that went really well a couple of years ago, Creed, you know, so again, Sylvester
Creed.
Returning
so
to the
good.
Rocky, you know, franchise with a new twist on it, which I thought we both agreed it was really good. It's
incredible.
A really good movie.
Yeah,
Creed 2 is coming out this year. Good. But at the same time, man, it had some sentimentality because that's what Sylvester does these days. But again, when you compare it with a Hoosiers, a Field of Dreams, you know, there's an aspect of it that's, you know, they got to keep that in check. They got to keep it in check.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Dude, they do. They definitely keep it in check. And I think the magical moment in Creed was almost personal for Sylvester Stallone. And it was Stallone, like, finally making his peace with being old.
Yes, absolutely.
And, like, to me, that was really significant.
It was.
And it was a really significant, like, cultural moment, too, because everybody in our culture is so obsessed with youth and young and anti-aging, this and that. And it's like, you know, Stallone finally sort of, you know, crying uncle and just saying, you know what, I'm a broken old man in this movie. And
crying uncle at 75 years old, I can't box anymore.
Dude, but it may have honestly been the greatest Stallone performance of all time. You know, it was reminiscent of his performance in Rocky I, you know, the first Rocky, 1976, Best Picture. He was young and vulnerable at that time. You know what I mean? He was young. He didn't have any money. He was kind of rough around the edges. He was vulnerable. And then you had like 3 decades of jacked, rich, steroidal Stallone, which was kind of boring.
Yes.
And then, you know, finally we come full circle and we have another broken
Rocky
Stallone,
Balboa.
Which is really the best Stallone. Yeah.
Well, Rocky Balboa,
exactly.
To me, I mean, there would be no Creed if there wasn't Rocky Balboa. And that's why I think that film is so significant. That's him battling with the end. You remember his son at some point goes, "What are you trying to prove, Pop? Like, what do you, like, I mean, this doesn't make, like," so his son is coming to him saying, like, "This doesn't make any sense anymore. Look in the mirror." And there was that reckoning moment between him and his son. And I thought that was such an important scene, which to me kind of led him to being able to do these Creed movies and have those things be cohesive, you know?
Dude, absolutely. Absolutely. So baby, we've got 5 minutes left. And not to put like too fine a point on this or put you in like too harsh of a spotlight. So in light of what you just said about Rocky Balboa, and I'll be interested in this, like, both as a friend and as like a writer who's getting a little bit older, like, what are you trying to prove?
Yeah.
Like, are you trying to prove anything right now? And if the answer is no, like, are you okay with that? Or is it distressing? What are you trying to prove?
Wow. That's a great question, Big T. And I actually appreciate you asking it because I think that when you get into your 40s and you watch movies like Rocky Balboa, again, these are men that are, you know, 25 years older than I am. But yet, with the passing of time, you see how quickly it goes, and you see that, like, we're going to blink our eyes and we're going to be in those places, in those positions, in those roles. And I think, I think there is a sense at when you hit middle age where you still are trying to prove yourself. And you're just starting, you're just finally starting to ask the question of why. And you actually don't want to get caught. And again, as a believer, you don't want to get caught up on this sort of this, on this treadmill that just has you keep, you know, going and going and going and keeps living this, what am I trying to prove lifestyle? But you want to rein that in a little bit. And you also want to look back a little bit to the generation that's coming up behind you instead of waiting until you're so old and you're so past your point of usefulness because you spent it just trying to prove yourself. So right now I would like to, I would like to sort of step back and go, okay, who's 20 years younger than me? Who's coming up that I can actually help, that I can mentor while I still do have, like, you know, full strength, full capacity. And, you know, even as some of those aches and pains are starting to come, you know, kind of a thing, but like no big deal. I'm still all there. So can I preempt some of that? Can I not get to the place that Stallone was in Rocky Balboa, where his son is saying, "Pop, what are you trying to prove?" Can I preempt that in sort of a gospel way that says, "Hey, God gives us times and seasons. How can we redeem those in sort of a wisdom way?" Right?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great note, man. That's a really interesting thought to end on. And yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, much like yourself, probably the years that you were in the music industry, and for me, like early in writing, like there was just such this like almost animalistic drive and hunger to produce, to create, to prove. And while at one level I do miss that, like I miss being that person, because I think there was a lot of like super compelling energy and vitality in that.
You miss the energy for sure.
I do. I miss the energy. I miss the hunger. I miss like deluding myself every time there would be a project and I would delude myself into thinking that like, this one was really going to move the needle. You know what I mean? It was going to change my life. And the fact of the matter is, and I know you would agree with this, like they all changed our lives. You know what I mean? And some of them changed our lives on the level of like, they just put food on the table and paid the mortgage for a given time. But, you know, others changed our lives in more significant ways.
Well, and let me speak to that for 1 second too, is that, you know, I mean, when you're involved in any commercial venture that is being promoted and being marketed, you know, anybody that's done anything that's been, you know, massively successful on a commercial level, it all starts out the same, right? It's just a guy at a desk. Yeah. It's a guy in a recording studio. It's just a guy with a glove and a ball, you know, whatever your chosen medium is, it all starts out base level and you have no idea if it's like everybody that became successful with whatever particular project they've chosen, they really didn't know it was going to be that or to do that. And so we all start out the same with that. So there is a sense that any time you're doing something that is going to be mass marketed and promoted, it does have the potential to do this crazy thing that you didn't anticipate. But because the potential's there, it's interesting how that informs the process, right? And that's what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, it totally is. And just that aspect of there being no ceiling.
Right,
You know, I remember in those days feeling with almost every project like there's no ceiling. But, you know, I think being this age, you've lived 15, 20 years of doing those projects and you realize like, you know, there is a ceiling and this is what it is. And this is what it's going to do. And I don't have any misconceptions and that sort of takes away the low lows. You know what I mean? You're not in that valley of despair as often anymore, which I am super grateful
100%.
For. But I also miss the super high highs. And,
it's fun to what you do is you dream less because you've been brought down to earth. And I think it's a better place to be in because you also understand that God's going to do what he's going to do with any of the things that we are invested in. And however successful or you know, unsuccessful he decides to make those things, it really does just come down to what he decides to do. And it's comforting to actually start believing that. I don't know if you can start believing that until you've been through it and you've grown a little and you're a little bit older.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, baby, let me end with this thought. I hope, and I hope that you join me in this, I hope that the Lord calls us back to Toledo for another glamorous publishing trip.
One can only dream. One can only dream.
And that's my flesh talking. You know, I think once you've been there, there's a hunger for that town. You know, you want to get back. So baby, Lord willing, one of these days, we will get back to Toledo's. We will go to another Mud Hens game for free. Instead of paying the $6 that it would take to get into a Mud Hens game. Otherwise we will go for free, as befitting of our status as media moguls. Baby, this has been a pleasure. This has been a really fun conversation.
So good. We should do it again.
Dude, I enjoy these apps, man. I really enjoy these these one-on-one kind of breakdown interview apps. These are a lot of fun. We should do it more often. And we have wandered to and fro throughout the psyche of Ron Martin. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
What happens when a writer and former history teacher goes toe-to-toe with his best friend, a nationally touring stand-up comedian? Total carnage, that's what. Two men enter, and two men leave, because that's how it works.
Actually, you get hilarious, real, and insightful conversations about life, history, culture, faith, and everything in between.
Join me, comedian Johnny W., and my pal, author and speaker John Driver, for Talk About That at lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.